This is Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. Health insurance is all over the headlines, and here in the Roaring Fork Valley, the news about rising premiums might be making some people a little sick to their stomach. So what's causing premiums to go up, and what steps can a consumer take to negotiate the health insurance landscape? Later in the show, we'll talk about insurance in the Roaring Fork Valley with Mark Devlin from Devlin Financial Services, an insurance broker and financial advisor, and Ross Brooks, CEO of local community health organization Mountain Family Health. But first, let's start with the big picture. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is the Vice Provost for Global Initiatives and Chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and was an advisor on the Affordable Care Act. I don't want to be too cheesy with my first question, but can you give us a diagnosis right now for the U.S. healthcare system? What's the picture as you see it?
So I think it's important to recognize that there are various parts of the American healthcare system, and they all don't have the same sort of diagnosis or grade. I am a professor. Mm-hmm. I often like to grade things. So part of the system in terms of the health insurance exchanges, which when people say the health system, they think of that, although truth be told, only about 17 million Americans, between 15 million and 17 million, get their insurance through the exchange or the individual marketplace. So it's a small number. Those are, you know, it's very unsettled at the moment, and it's unsettled mm-hmm. because of policy indeterminacy down in Washington about all these subsidies, enforcing the mandate. It's made it life very difficult for insurance companies. A lot of them are withdrawing rather than put up with the nonsense. They're, by nature, insurance companies are cautious. They like to minimize risk. That's mm-hmm. how they make money. And so they're being very, probably very responsible and being hesitant about how much to do in the marketplaces. And so I think that's causing a lot of angst, especially for people who get their insurance through that or who worry that they might, you know, they might lose a job, their employer might scale back on their insurance, and they might go into the exchange. For others of us, like in the employer market, 178 million Americans get their insurance through their employer. That's actually been relatively stable over the years, the last few years. What has been a little unstable is employers have been shifting a lot more of the costs onto employees. Deductibles have been going up to control costs. But ironically enough, things have actually been, I would say, in healthcare, it's always relative, but relatively stable compared to years before. I point out that, during the first 4 years of George Bush, his administration, costs were sky high and premiums rocketed substantially, about 80%. And they have they're nowhere near that subsequent to the Affordable Care Act. So that's one part, getting insurance, et cetera. There's also the healthcare system as to how well the system itself is doing in terms of raising quality lowering costs. And again, ironically, most Americans, I think, are unaware, healthcare costs have moderated substantially in the 7 years since passage of the Affordable Care Act. Quality is certainly as good, if not a little better, in various particular focal areas like hospital infections and readmission rates and things like that. In general, I think there's sort of been a sea change, mostly psychological, by the health system. Everyone knows they have to improve their performance. And that's, I think, the most optimistic element in that, you know, the health systems are really working to improve their game.
That's great. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a simple question, but I know it has a complex answer. Why are insurance rates going up right now, especially on the individual marketplace?
It really has all to do with two factors. One factor is the bills they get from hospitals and doctors and things like that. And that's, when those go up, insurance company rates have to go up. So that's one element. As mm-hmm. I mentioned, there's been a moderation, and that's been a good thing. Moderation doesn't mean it's been flat. More importantly, especially in the exchanges and the individual market, is the fact that it's the pool. Who's in those markets? And that is where we have, if you don't get a wide spectrum of patients, if you concentrate those markets on mostly for older or sicker patients, the rates are going to be higher just because that's who's getting insurance. So one of the problems, I think, of the uncertainty of the market, of the announcement, you know, not providing cost-sharing subsidies, maybe not enforcing the mandate, all of those things are, well, marginal people who tend to be younger, healthier, and are gambling that they won't need health care aren't going to buy insurance. And the consequence of that is, all right, so then you concentrate older, sicker patients in the exchanges. That means the premiums have to go up because they use more health care. So it's really what we call in the industry, it's about the risk pool. Mm-hmm. Who's in that market? So
are we paying more because insurance companies are taking on that risk, or are they after higher profits?
Well, both things are true to some degree. And this is a history is very important here. So when the exchanges opened up in 2014, the insurance companies didn't know who was going to come in, right? So they had to charge a premium without knowing who the customer was. They tended to lowball because they wanted to get experience. They wanted to get some market share. They were much lower than sort of all the government experts predicted they would be. And in the last few years, the prices for 2017, the prices for 2018 went up because they had some experience and they were readjusting their premiums. But it's important, and it's important to know two things. One, they are making money, which is a good thing. It means a lot of them are going to stay in the marketplace. But a second thing is also the fact is their premiums are still below what were projected to be their premiums by the Congressional Budget Office. Mm-hmm. So even though they've raised their rates, net-net in terms of what was anticipated, they're actually lower than a lot of people thought they would be. So, yes, they have raised their rates partly out of this uncertainty, partly because of who's in the marketplace. But we should also, and this is hard for a lot of people, well, you know, what we anticipated they would raise, you know, they're still a slightly lower than that. And so that points out that there has been, again, this moderation in healthcare costs compared to what the experts had projected.
So what creative fixes do you see that could be explored? Like, what's out there that we haven't taken a look at or that we could look at more to reduce costs or to even invite more people into the marketplace who are young?
So those are two separate issues. How could we reduce costs and how could we get more people into the marketplace? So let's tackle the issue of how we actually get the premiums down by working on the marketplace. So there's probably three or four different things you can do, none of them rocket science, every one of them sort of well-known to health policy experts. One is obviously these cost-sharing subsidies that go to families under 250% of the poverty line, about $64,000. That helps them with the deductibles and copays, guaranteeing that they'll have insurance companies lower their rates because otherwise they're responsible for them. Guaranteeing enforcement of the mandate vigorously would get more marginal people to come in, and that's, I think, a very helpful. Reinsurance so that and risk corridor so that insurance companies, if they get very high and sick, high costing and sick patients, they're protected. That, I think, would be very, very helpful.
And is that a step that the federal government would have to take, is guaranteeing that mandate?
Yeah, okay. And actually that's one of those crazy situations where for a small amount of money you get a big bang in terms of the reduced premiums, and the government even gets more money back, as it were, quote in quotes, because the if the premiums come down, the amount of subsidies the federal government spends goes down, and so it's a very good way of actually stretching dollars for the federal government. One of the things people don't understand is when the one part of the government says, listen, we're not paying these cost-sharing subsidies, and premiums go up, another part of the government has to cover that increase in premiums because they also pay subsidies for people who buy the insurance. And so these, you know, not paying the cost-sharing subsidies is actually counterproductive for the government. It costs more. So the Republicans have been, actually, this is fiscally imprudent, what the Republicans are doing. Then there's other things that can be done. So you could relieve insurance companies who go into these so-called bear or minimal markets where there aren't that many insurers, and you can say to them, all right, we'll not apply the tax in the ACA to these insurance companies if they go into a market that has only one other competing insurance or no competing insurance. That would actually be very helpful to ensure that every county gets insurance companies. Again, none of these solutions are rocket science. All of them are well known by policy experts. It's politicians that have, you know, want to make a punching bag of the exchanges rather than solve practical problems. Cost control is a completely different issue. There, what I think really needs to happen is we need to change how we pay doctors and hospitals so they're strongly encouraged to keep costs down, to focus on keeping patients healthy, keeping them out of the hospital. And that involves things that are put under this rubric called alternative payment models. Rather than paying a fee every time someone uses the health system, you give doctors a bundle payment so they complete a whole sequence of procedures, say a total hip replacement that includes the fee for the doctor, the anesthesiologist, the hospital, the implant, the post-hospital rehabilitation, any complications that arise. That strongly incentivizes doctors to be very efficient and look at where the waste is and to cut it out. And we've seen some substantial gains on that if doctors are paid that way. That's just one of many. Obviously, tackling the drug issue would be, and the drug cost issue would be very, very helpful. So those are, I think, two areas in terms of actually reducing total costs, not just premium, that would be very helpful.
So it seems like everyone has a story like my cousin lives in Canada or wherever and had this surgery or this procedure and it was all paid for and they got great care. But are there things that you see the American healthcare system doing better?
Yes. So my last book that came out in June is called Prescription for the Future. And basically what I did is spend 3 years going around looking at places that I say were knocking it out of the park. They were doing high quality care at lower cost. And I came out with 12 different sort of what I call transformational practices. When you go around the country, you get really optimistic seeing these innovators out there doing amazing things to deliver better care to patients. So that makes me wildly optimistic that we can actually get positive change. Mm. So I think there are lots of those things, you know, and it's everything from simple changes like, you know, how do you schedule a patient? Leaving 20 or 30 or 40% of your time slots, you being the doctor's time slots, open every day for a people who have to walk in with problems. Saves on the emergency room, deals with today's problems today. At a very, very important chronic care coordinators that coordinate the care for patients with who are high cost and have serious chronic illness and may be unstable. Every place that's done it has done it more or less the same way. You embed one of these chronic care coordinators right with the doctor, whether with a primary care doctor or an oncologist or cardiologist, and they are empowered not to wait for the patient to show up, but to reach out to patients and to actually get them care. So,
So I want to talk a little bit about the Roaring Fork Valley. So in rural areas like the Roaring Fork Valley, everyone's insurance costs, whether they're on the marketplace or they have employer insurance, they're going up. So what's the, like, help us?
Well, I think, one of the things in rural areas or in high-cost areas like Aspen is you've got high-cost providers. And that drives up, you know, you say, well, the insurance company. Yeah, but the insurance companies are not exclusively but largely responding to who's got insurance and the cost of hospitals and doctors. And, you know, Aspen hospitals aren't cheap, and that's one of the, you see that reflected in premiums. And So, you know, you've got to be careful who's to blame here. Is it the hospital, the doctor, the insurance company? And there may be blame to spread out to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what's really important. We're going to need a lot of innovation in rural areas in this country for delivering high health care. You know, it's not good to have, and there are a number of hospitals in you know, some reaches of Colorado that are relatively small, you know, just a few beds, therefore they're expensive. You know, these are big challenges, and I think this is one place where, telemedicine may help and may be very, very beneficial. And I will say, you know, I think there are a lot of people in America who are frustrated by aspects of the system. It's complicated. It's unaffordable, et cetera. And I think letting your congressman or representatives know, you know, affordability is very important to me. I'm hoping that over the next few years, some of these great innovations on keeping costs down become just much more generalized, and people, systems put them in place, and people begin to see the savings on their insurance.
I think it's interesting that, like, political action is one of the things that everyday people can do. I mean,
oh yeah,
we've got elections.
Yeah, I mean, people may not appreciate it, but, you know, representatives do monitor what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They listen to their constituents.
Thank you so much, Dr. Emanuel, for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Yep.
You're listening to Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay. That was Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. So let's bring this home and talk about the changing picture of health insurance in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm joined next by Mark Devlin, an insurance broker and financial advisor, and Ross Brooks, CEO of Mountain Family Health. Ross Brooks, CEO of Mountain Family Health, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Devlin from Devlin Financial Services, thanks for being here. Mark, let's start with the picture for insurance here in the Roaring Fork Valley. What are we seeing?
This year, we're seeing between 30 and 45% rate increases for those with individual plans. On the group plans, we're seeing anywhere from 10 to 30% rate increases as well. For those with government subsidies, we actually are seeing the same rate increases. We do see an increase in the amount of subsidies that are being given to the people that qualify for those subsidies, but we don't have the subsidies keeping up with the rate of insurance, with the insurance rates. So that's the problem.
And Ross, it sounds like everybody's facing increases, pretty substantial increases. How are you seeing this affect care?
It's a good question. There's actually a difference between commercial increases and what's happening in the Medicaid and the Medicare marketplace. So Medicaid is coverage for lower income families who live on less than 138% of the federal poverty level. So that's about $16,000 or less for a single individual, which is not much in our communities. Medicare is health insurance for typically older adults, 65 and older. In those markets, especially in the Medicaid market, there are not significant increases. Very different from the commercial market. And the real secret sauce there is that we've been plugging away at getting people into primary care and keeping people out of the hospital unnecessarily. So there's a little proof in the pudding there where Medicaid rates aren't going up like they are in the commercial marketplace. Mm-hmm. Now, that gets into a little bit of the dialogue and the discussion about government coverage and commercial coverage and where you stand on believing healthcare is a human right and all of that stuff, and we can have that conversation. But for our patients, we're not seeing that great price increase. Now, for the uninsured, however, which make up about a third of our patients, most of those individuals can't even afford to buy into the private marketplace like Mark was talking about, even with the subsidies, because the subsidies aren't creating enough incentive, and a lot of folks will just take the tax penalty, and or those individuals are undocumented and don't qualify for the subsidies anyway. So we still have about a third of our patients at Mountain Family. We got about 19,000 patients, more than 6,000 human beings who have no health insurance at all whatsoever.
And that number could potentially grow, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it will this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will too. It's grown over the last year in part because of the pricing increases, in part just because of kind of fear and chaos and hearing the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is going to get repealed and replaced. You know, hearing that over and over, our patients often have a fear that they don't qualify for insurance at all.
Can we talk about how that would, like the increase in uninsured people, how is that going to affect the market for everyone? And how does that affect individuals? Like, can we put a human face on it? Mark, we'll start with you.
So the more uninsured people we see out there, the more it's costing the system, which unfortunately is going to drive the insurance costs even further north. It's the insurance companies are looking at trying to get as many people captured as they can so they can target their claims that they're going to be paying out. And when you're taking away a population that can't afford to have insurance, it's just going to drive those costs even further north, I believe. And it's going to also affect people like Ross and the hospitals that are going to absorb some of these costs because not only can they not afford insurance, but they can't afford to pay their bills.
Well said. I'm not sure I've got anything meaningful to add. I think from an insurance perspective, that's completely right. And for those families, a lot of low-income families, they struggle not just with health care, but with housing costs, with rent costs, with transportation costs, et cetera, et cetera. So I see the uninsured increasing as having a really negative economic impact on our entire community. And from employed populations to the uninsured who are often working two or three jobs, it ain't great for the Roaring Fork Valley or all of Western Colorado.
Let's talk about the Roaring Fork Valley, because I know that things are tougher in rural areas. What are some challenges that are unique to us?
The Roaring Fork Valley is definitely taking, realistically, the western slope is taking a very big hit with insurance rates. We're seeing a lot more increase here than we would see from the Denver market, for example. So we are definitely a higher cost for care up here, which shows in the insurance rates. And that unfortunately is going to affect the premiums. It's going to affect the people that become uninsured. It's the people that can't afford it that are going to really take a look at these new numbers and say, gosh, I can't do it again this year. And that's going to unfortunately create the downward spiral where more and more people become uninsured, which drives the costs even further north.
So what can everyday people do here? Like, what's your advice for the smartest move that people can make?
See what your health insurance options are. You need to really understand that with somebody who can help you think through your options. Second, just like you would put oil in your car to keep your engine from breaking down, you need to invest in your own primary care and your own preventive well-being. So go see your primary care provider. If you don't have one, get a primary care provider. This can be a doctor, a nurse practitioner, a physician assistant. And you want to make sure that you're getting the preventative primary care you need up front, so ultimately you stay out of the hospital for unnecessary reasons. Mm-hmm. I think third is to continue to become a more informed consumer. So there are tools online today. I have a tool on my iPhone called Health Advocate that helps me understand the cost of my care. If I'm going to get my knee replaced or if I'm going to get a CT scan, I can go online right now and understand the cost of that care in Glenwood Springs versus Grand Junction versus Denver. Mm-hmm. I think it is incumbent on all of us as consumers of healthcare to start to utilize those tools so that we're making wiser cost-based decisions on where we get our care.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. We see a fairly high cost of care for certain items here in this Roaring Fork Valley. And if you are an educated consumer or at least can find the cost of care in different parts of the state, it might behoove you to look at Denver, to look at Grand Junction, to look at Glenwood Springs, even look at Aspen realistically. Some things are going to cost less in different parts of the state. So if you are going in for something more substantial than a doctor's visit, I would be advising anyone to really take a look at what the cost is for that procedure.
Are there other creative fixes out here for the system that you two see from your perspectives?
I think the other thing that I think about sometimes is that within the healthcare industry, Big Eye, I include myself in that, we think of a lot of these things as happening inside the four walls of Mountain Family, and that's pretty limited thinking on my part, because most people's health, probably 90%, happens outside the walls of Mountain Family, and it has more to do with education, housing, transportation, healthy food choices, affordable food choices, one's mental health, than it does with anything that Mountain Family might do at the end of the day. And I think we do great work. But at the end of the day, that doesn't ultimately help make a healthy, happy community as much as those other things I just talked about. So in wonky land, we call those social determinants of health. And I think as communities, as we start to invest in those areas, we actually will see costs come down as well and people's health start to improve. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the bigger picture that we really want to try to tackle, is the health and ultimate well-being of our community outside of the traditional healthcare system.
To play off of Ross, I believe that he's absolutely spot on for that. If we can promote a healthy lifestyle, then we should be able to get a lot less insurance costs, a lot less claims out there, and it'll help our system dramatically. As a country, I don't think we've really done that. We haven't really promoted good health. We are promoting the goods and services that may not necessarily promote good health. Mm-hmm. And I think as a country, we have to step back and look at that and say, really, this is one of the solutions, is to get our country to understand what it's going to take to be a healthy society.
And Mark, I understand there's an important deadline coming up. If we go back to steps that people can take, what should people be aware of?
The open enrollment period started on November 1st and will terminate on December 15th if you want a January 1st effective date. For those that missed that deadline, January 15th is the ultimate deadline to get signed up for health insurance. One piece that I would like to kind of throw out there is what you can do to kind of keep your income down, so that if you are close to that cutoff for subsidies, you have the ability to kind of get your income under control. And so you have a couple of different tools, as I call it, in your belt. If you are an individual that doesn't have a retirement plan at your place of employment, you can actually do an IRA, a traditional IRA that gives you the opportunity to put away pre-tax money. For those that are good savers, also, we have what's called a health savings account, or an HSA, that gives you the opportunity, as long as you have a compatible plan, to put money into a health savings account. And those two tools will help to get your income down. If you are close to that $48,000 cutoff as an individual, you might be able to put some money away for yourself and actually get money from the government to help these increased costs.
All right. Ross, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Mark, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. My guests today were Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, Mark Devlin from Devlin Financial Services, and Ross Brooks, CEO of Mountain Family Health. This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay. If you missed today's show, you can find it on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Cross Currents is a production of Aspen Public Radio.